Okay, gentlemen, take out your trusty paper, pencil, or computers, or iPads, or whatever it is you use to write with. Our traditionalists, of course, like the crushed trees and so on, makes them feel connected to the earth, which connects to today's daf in Brachot. And if you want to feel that way, please go right away and do so. But what we're going to do today is deal with the general ideas of Seder Tyres, and then move on to the concepts of the Kalim particularly. So in starting Taharot, which is our beginning today, which begins with Masechet Kalim, let's just review some of the basic ideas of Tumah. So remember, the concept of Tumah is a concept that has no secular equivalent, and therefore it cannot be translated. In reality, the idea of Tumah is the way in which the nature of a world of entropy and what appears to be mere probability is asserting itself over the way in which we really are existential entities. And that is anything that has to do with this concept of the loss of life in death, or the loss of life in probability. And the most important area of that probability issue is precisely where it is that Bilam HaRasha saw it. It's in reproduction. Anything that has to do with reproduction is a mess, not the Hebrew word mess, but related to the Hebrew word mess. Because in reality, anything that has to do with reproduction has to do with wastage. And it's wastage of living entities, living cells, that end up being, for no reason whatsoever, washed away in as if they're completely worthless things. That is a contradiction to the nature of the power of the being that we experience in ourselves. And it is the very thing that Bilam HaRasha used to question the nature of meaning and the nature of life itself. So because of that, anything that is associated with death itself or with reproduction's wastage, which would include wasted sperm, it would include, which is always part of reproduction, would include wasted preparations for carrying a new life in the womb, which becomes, of course, nidus, menstrual bleeding, and, of course, any pathogenic type of discharge that would be reproductive fluid discharge, whether it's male or whether it's female. All of that is considered to be tummy by definition. The various ways in which death makes itself felt is not only human death and not only death of human reproductive cells and materials, but also death in animals, which is called a nevela, death in certain types of creepy crawlies, which are called sherets. And there's only eight type of those type of things, which are not really only creepy crawlies, because in English we use the word creepy crawlies specifically for insects of the various types. Here it includes things that crawl along the ground. We'll talk about what the eight are, but the eight shratzim. And then we have another fascinating issue, which is death of cells relating to humans, which has to do with cancer and breakdown of cellular reproduction, which is called sarat. So we have, on the one hand, we have nida, we have zav, zava, balkeri. We have, of course, the oledet herself, because in every birth there is wastage, zeporesh l'misa v'zeporesh l'chayim, as the Gemara puts it. We have the body of a mace, a corpse. We have also a dead animal, which is a nevela, a dead bird, which is a nevela, which is different, whether it's a kosher bird, a non-kosher bird, as we'll see, does not include fish and does not include all shrutzi. And these are all of the sources, the makorot of Tumah. And in order to understand them differently, we need to also recognize that Tuma is by definition attenuated with its passage. So any contact with Tuma is bad news, but sometimes it can affect an object or a human, and sometimes it can't. Here is the general idea. The absolute most Tuma issue, Moshe Andel, you really want to interrupt? You raised your hand electronically?
I just wanted to know what Zav and Zav is.
Sorry, your internet's not good enough to communicate with you. I'm sorry. You can write the question. We can't hear you. So we start with the highest level of Tuma. The highest level of Tuma.
Is Rebbe recording?
Is Rebbe recording?
Yes, I am. You can see that on the screen. Please stop interrupting, gentlemen. Thank you. And you can write. So we have what is called the Avi Avot HaTuma. Avi Avot HaTuma is an actual dead body. A dead body, if it touches a human living human, will make that human being an Av HaTuma. This is the only time when we have a plus plus, not just a plus. So the Avi Havot HaTuma, the granddaddy, as we would say in English, of all Tuma, is a dead body. If it touches anything that can be Makabel Tuma, and that Kabbalah's Tuma is an issue in and of itself, and that's what Kalim is all about, what things could be Makabel Tuma, which we'll talk about in a moment. But before we get there, let's assume there's a class of objects called Kalim, and another class of objects called living beings that are Makabel Tuma. So if an Avi Avot HaTuma touches anything, including a human being or Kalim, and certainly the classes of things that are very easily Metame, and those are the classes of Ochlin and the classes of Mashkin. So foodstuffs or drinks. And when we say drinks, we don't mean anything like Coca-Cola and apple juice. We mean seven particular mashkin that are defined by the Torah as mashkin. So those are the classes of objects that we have. There are many subclasses, as we'll see, but those are the basic classes. Now, the Avi Avot HaTuma will affect all classes. The Av HaTuma will affect all classes. But from Av HaTuma down, so something that touches an Av HaTuma becomes a Rishon Natuma, something that it can be Metame, and it cannot be Metame all classes. It cannot be Metame Kalim. It cannot be Metame humans. It can be Metame foodstuffs. It can be Metame liquids. So the next stage down would be a Sheni Letuma. Generally speaking, a Sheni Letuma does not affect anything. However, in the case that we're talking about things that are exceedingly special, and the word for special is Kodesh. So if something is special, now there are different levels of specialness in the same way that there are different levels of Tuma. Those are very similar in the Tzad HaKiddusha and in the Tzad HaTuma. The things that are super special are Kochim. The things that are special are Truma. According to some, there's another class of special objects, which would be the dinim of Maaser Sheni, which we'll talk about, but not here. So now, if Truma comes into contact with a Sheni, oh, now all of a sudden, the Sheni can pass on Truma, Tuma to Truma. However, let us get our terminology correct. The word Tamei means, by definition, that the object is detectable by a Tuma Geiger counter. A Tuma Geiger counter means that we have a theoretical machine, a device, that will detect particles of Tuma that are coming out of something. That and only that is Tame. There are things that Tame has affected, but that cannot themselves emit Tuma. Those things, even though they are no good because they've been touched by Tuma, are not called Tmeim. Technically speaking, They are called pisulim. So therefore, an Ava Tumah can make a Rishon Letumah. A Rishon Letumah can make a Sheni Letumah. But a Sheni Letumah cannot make a real Shlishi Letumah, even if it's Truma. It can make a Pasul Shlishi, but it cannot make a Tumah Shlishi. However, we still use the word Shlishi for it. Why? Because for Kachim, that Shlishi is so, the Kachim is so sensitive that a Shlishi can even make a Revi'i as Pasul. So it's Pasul a Revi'i by Kodesh. That is very similar to Avi Avot, Avot, Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, Revi'i. There too, we talk about the objects of Chulin, of Meiser, of Truma, and of Kodesh. They are affected to different degrees by exposure to different levels of Tumah. Now, this makes a great deal of sense within the context of the concepts of Tumah. Tumah is the contradiction to the state of Kiddusha that relates to Tahara. And this is why Taharot and Kodashim are so profoundly interrelated that they are called the Chochmat Vada'at in the list of the Shisha Sidorim. Obviously, the interrelationship of Chochmat as Kodashim with Da'at, which is Taharos, is profound in terms of the development of human consciousness as well. The tragedy is that we have no awareness of these things today, and basically because the dinim are not applicable since nobody eats their kulin b'tayra anymore, and we are all tamei meisim, which makes truma out of reach for karnim as well. So the overall entrenchment of our lives embedded in tuma has really ruined our sensitivity to the concept of Tumah, although people have some small sense of Tumah in where they're exposed to things that will make them Tameh, and they like to be Tahar as much as possible if they're sensitive. So because of this, someone who would have a wet dream would go to the mikvah. Why? Because he feels somehow impure. Somebody who would be Tameh from going into a Beit HaKvarot, even though he can't become Tohar by going to the mikveh, because he would still need the paraduma, which unfortunately, again, tragically, we don't have. But again, to whatever extent the person feels that he can be metayer himself, he's metayer himself. Many people who go to chutz la'aretz, which is a source of tumah, minarabonan, will go to the mikveh when they come back to Eretz Yisrael because they simply feel impure. They feel exposed to dirt, in a sense, a spiritual level of dirt, which makes them want to return to themselves. These are all inyanim that we still have some level of sensitivity to. So when you say that something made you really disgusted, say, I felt I needed to go to the mikveh after being there, you know, so that is, that expression itself shows that there is this at least subliminal awareness of ideas of tumah. So those are, again, just going through the various things. We have the mate, we have the nevela, we have the sheretz, then we have the reproductive issues, the zov, the zava, the nida, the oledes, then we have the similar to the mate because of the breakdown of a living body, which includes tzoraat. Those are the sources of tumah, and we've talked about all of the levels of tumah. Now, let's talk about the objects, which now takes us into the idea of kalim. So kalim, the literal meaning of kalim, is that it's some type of tool, some type of utensil. A kli also is often used to understand is something that is a holder. There's a reason for that, because it turns out that there's certain classes of kalim that will only become tameh if they are containers and not if they're just tools. But let's start at the bottom. If you have something that is a simple natural material, a natural material never is mekabel tumah. There's a very profound reason for this. Tumah is something that is associated with evil and loss. Evil and loss are traced back in the Torah to humans. They were the ones who brought loss into the world. It was the very human consciousness, which is Da'at, that created the problem of Da'eth, which is related, of course, to that word Da'at in Hebrew. And because of it, anything that is not a human-type object will not be Mekabel Tumah. For that matter, anything which is not human is not Mekabel Tumah. Therefore, an animal, living animal, cannot be Mekabel Tumah. Living things are not Mekabel Tumah by definition, except humans, because of that. And it's because of that that Midiraisa, since after the breakdown of the nations of the world and the selection of Yisrael, only Yisrael are considered human, Goyim are not Mekabel Tumah. The only dinim that we have of Tumah by Goyim has to do with dinim derabbanan, where we were gozer Tumah on Goyim. But since it says Adam Atem, living objects are not Mekabel Tumah, natural objects, if they're not alive, are not Mekabel Tumah, and other than humans, natural objects are not Mekabel Tumah at all, of any kind. So it needs to be a Kli, because a Kli, of course, is the first sign that a human being has gotten involved. Consciousness has formed something. And because of that, it's part of Da'at, and because of that, it can be Mekabel Tumah. So if I take a raw material and I form it into some type of tool, which is the real meaning of Kli, it will become Tumah. Now, there are different classes of materials, and those different classes of materials make a tremendous difference in what the requirements are to turn that material into a type of Kli that's Mekabel Tumah. Now, a very simple and very primitive class of materials is the earth itself. The earth itself, the clay that we find in the earth, is certainly not Mekabel Tumah, but it can be formed into objects that are Mekabel Tumah if they are processed. What is that processing? It's baking, essentially, firing up the clay. If one takes clay and forms a beautiful, as a child, a beautiful Play-Doh pot, it's not going to be Mekabel Tumah. Even though it is a temporary Kli, and it is an actual receptacle, it's not considered to be a human completed tool yet. And the fact is, of course, that animals make tools like that too, as we've come to discover recently. So what that means is that clay adama, let's take that clay adama are not Mekabel Tumah. So that class of objects, clay adama, no Tumah. Clay cheres, on the other hand, which would take those adama, fire it up and make it into a permanent type of clay, are Mekabel Tumah. So that's another class of objects. Then we have, of course, we have metal. Now, metal is a type of object that is for sure a human type of kli, requires a lot of processing, and has very different dinim. How about if we take wood and we make a kli out of wood? That is also able to be Mekabel Tumah. How about if we make bones into kalim? Bones into kalim are also Mekabel Tumah. How about if we take leather from an animal and we make it into a tablecloth or something like that? They can also be Mekabel Tumah, assuming it's not the leather that's made out of fish. How about materials that need to be woven? Different cloths, so different types of fiber. Those things are also considered to be a kli. It's a type of tool. And the other one that is not a diraita is the class of objects that are made from raw earthy materials but they are neither earthenware, china, or anything like it. And what's that? Glass. You take sand, you fire up the sand, and now you've made a kli. But the thing is that the Torah never views glass, never talks about glass as a kli at all. It was the Rabbanan who created that idea that glass, and some modern poskim hold that the din of glass would apply to plastics as well, even though that's not at all clear that it should be related, because even though the nature of the formation is similar, but you cannot say that it's made out of earth, so to speak. So let's talk about the difference between these various things, because they're very, very different. The kli adama, no tuma whatsoever. Clean, oh, I forgot to mention, there is one other thing. Dung. Remember, in many parts of the world, dung is a very valuable material for turning into kaolin. These are called clay gilalim. Clay gilalim are not considered to be human objects, and they are not mekabel tuma. There's another thing that is not mekabel tuma that you would think is a human object, but this proves Michelangelo's point. If you take a stone and you turn it into the object, you're really only removing the parts of the stone that shouldn't have been there. David was always in that stone, you see. That was his point. But in a sense, that's true. You're not forming the stone. You're removing the parts that make it not an object, you see. And therefore, stone will never be considered to be a kli, even though you take off parts of it and you make it into the arrowhead that's going to kill somebody, as every primitive human knew how to do, it's not considered to be a kli. Okay, so again.
Haktochos.
Exactly. It's very similar to haktochos, yes. So therefore we have clay gilalim, clay adama, clay avanim. These things are not mekabel tuma. So that's out of the running bichlal. Now let's take the simplest clay, kli cheres, fired up dirt kalim. Now they become porcelain or they become earthenware. Sometimes if they're covered with a metallic lead coating, they become china. That's already maybe a completely different thing. Let's not talk about that yet. But these things are mekabel tuma, but they're mekabel tuma in a very special way. They're not like general kalim. They are not mekabel tuma by touching them on their outside, which is the normal way of being mekabel tuma. And let us just review. We spoke about the levels of tuma. Remember, there are different ways of being mekabel tuma. I should have said this before, and please write that down as a separate category. We have the straightforward Kabbalah tuma, which is maga, touching. We have the more complex Kabbalah tuma, which occurs only in certain things, which is called masa, carrying. We have another level of Kabbalah Stuma, which is called Ohel. That applies only to things that are related to a dead body, parts of a dead body, blood from a dead body, and so on. And that is Batami if it's under the same roof, technically roof, and that is called Tumas Ohel. That needs to be one tefach wide, cover over both things, and that already is enough. Or if the thing itself becomes that you become a roof over that thing, like putting your hand over it, your face over it, that is Tumas Ohel. There are other very special kinds of Tuma. One of them is called Tum'at Bia, in terms of coming into a house where there is a Tzora'at, and that is Betamayu if you stay in that house. There is also Tum'at Bi'ila, which is intercourse. And that is only in the case of a nida or a zava, a male who has intercourse with her will have tuma. But as we learned last night, intercourse only works as tuma from female to male, not from male to female. And there's one other additional weird way of becoming tame, and that is swallowing the nevela of an oath tohar. Fine. That has its own special masecha. We'll be talking about that. Now, the dinim of Kabbalah Stuma v'Kli Cheres are unique. Because this Kli Cheres will only be Mekabel Tumah if it is contacted in its inside area, not in its outside. Absolutely unique. And what's more, it's unique in that it's Mekabel Tumah and gives off Tumah in the airspace within the Kli, even if there's no actual contact, which is quite amazing. That is called Avir Kli Cheres. The outside is called Gabo. The inside is called Tocho. Remember those differences. There's a certain class of Kli Cheres that is in the Torah, which is called Tanur V'Kirayim. Tanur V'Kirayim are odd because they are the way that in ancient times, a Kli Cheres that was not a true Beit Kibul. Remember how an oven was made. You basically formed a round sort of cone type thing, open at the top in order to put the bread in along the sides, the pitot, and open at the bottom completely, which you then put on the ground, cemented around the bottom. And therefore, technically speaking, this is a tube. And a tube is not considered to be a sealed container and therefore should not be Mekabel Tumah by normal standards. Nonetheless, the Torah considers a tanur openly. Tanur V'Kirayim is considered to be a Kli Cheres. Why? Well, there's different ways that it's understood. Either because the Torah has talked about a new set, which is Tanur V'Kirayim, not dissimilar to other Kli Cheres, but there's another explanation. It is similar to other Kli Cheres in the sense that the container space of a Kli Cheres used for heating is by definition sealed by pressing against the earth, and that is the closed container. So even though normally this violates two norms, one norm is connectivity per se cancels a din of kaling, which means that the word for that is mechubar. Anything that is mechubar is not Mekabel Tumah. My grandfather Zatzal paskened, as do other poskim, that anything that is connected to the electricity, such as your kettle, your electric kettle, will not be Mekabel Tumah because it only works when connected to the ground. Therefore, its workability as a human tool demands connection to the earth, which, by the way, is the word we actually use for the grounding. It needs to be grounded. And that idea takes away its tumah because of that. He says you don't have to put it into the mikveh. There's no din of tefilas kelim on any of these things. Fine. So it may well be that these two violations of tanur v'kirayim are a special category and a new set, or it may be that this is the definition of the kli and that the kli is not called mechuber, but on the contrary, the earth has become part of the kli. But in any event, we do have that special idea. Metal kelim, on the other hand, they do not need a container space. If they are a container, there's no difference between their outside or their inside. They are not metame or mitame with their airspace. So the avir makes absolutely no difference. When it comes to wooden kelim, most poskim hold all types of cellulose is considered to be wood. Some people say it really needs to be mamash wood, and that the other things like baskets and so on, which are made from reeds and so on, would only be midrabanan. Okay. The din of a kli 8 is that it has to have a container. Pshute kli 8 is the word for flat kelim, are not considered to be a kli as a human kli, but there's one very special din, midrabanan, and that is called mishamshe adam or mishamshe ha'adam, two different classes. This means things that are used directly for a person, such as a flat table, let's say. A table, a chair, does not have a container space, but since it is used by a human for sitting on, and the table is used by a human to keep his tools on, such as his plates, they are, by definition, also considered to be real kelim and not pshutei kli eitz, the very important idea. In addition, we also have the idea of fabrics or leather. Now, these are, even though they do not have a shape, they are considered to be as fabric. Woven fabric is already considered to be makabel tuma. Why? Because it is suitable to take on any shape. That's the point. If I have a talit, you could say, yeah, but it doesn't have a beit kibul. But the moment I wrap it around myself, it is obviously enwrapping me. And therefore, in its essence, is a beit kibul. The din of kli etzem also is the same as wood and the same as ore. All of these things except for the kli cheres are mekabel tahara as well by being put into the mikveh. They are all called collectively the class of objects that are kli shetef, washable objects, meaning washable in a mikveh to remove the tumah. The only thing that is not called a kli shetef is a kli cheres, which cannot have its tumah removed. You'd have to change it from a kli to a non-kli by breaking it. At the moment that it loses its status of a kli, anything loses its tumah, because tumah cannot stick to a non-human object. When it comes to metal kalim, because it is possible to remake them by soldering them or melting them, the Rabbanan were gozer a concept called chozer letum'a yishana. Tum'a yishana means a reconstructed kli that had been made out of metal regains its original tum'a, but that's only a din midrabbana. There is a lower class baguette, which is its own class, called sak. Sak is something that's made out of goat, the hair of a goat, which is very coarse. It has the rules of, except it has different shiurim, because it can be made into sacks and therefore is itself considered to be a kli, the same way that or is considered to be a kli. There's a machlokas arishonim, whether glass can become tar in a mikveh or not. Is it like kli cheres or not? Now, this, of course, has to do with whether you need to be tevel kalim when you buy them of glass, because you do not have to be tevel kli cheres, which have no tire b'mikveh, and therefore the mikveh has no impact on. Gentlemen, that is basically the ruling, except for the fact that you need to understand that there are dinim that apply to all of these classes. One is you need nigmar melachta. We're going to be discussing a lot of that. What is the point at which da'at, the consciousness of the human who wants to make this into a kli, actually affects the nature of the kli? Only where it is what it is meant to be. Now, simple kalim, the more simple the kli, the less we demand it to be fully completed. So let's say a kli eitz. Once a kli eitz does what it basically meant to do, it's a spoon, and I hollowed it out, it's considered to be a kli, even if I meant to make decorations on it and so on. But a more complex kli, like a kli matachot, would only be a kli when I finished all of my work. An additional very important point is, how about parts of a kli that are not essentially the din of the kli? For instance, you've got a long handle to a frying pan. The handle doesn't hold anything. Is it or is it not part of the frying pan? That is called yadot. Yadot are not, I mean, literally they mean handles. But a yad is anything that makes it easy to handle the kli. That's called yadot. And a yad functions as an ingress and egress for tuma. So tuma goes straight through a yad as if it's transparent to tuma, whether it's in terms of being makabel tuma or putting out tuma. There's another, one last concept over here, which is called mitaltel Male Verekam, something that is too large to be moved, if it's made out of wood, is for sure not Mekabel Tuma. And some learn that even sack for sure. Some learn even kalim made out of bone and kalim made out of leather also cannot be tame if they're too large to carry around. That shear is arba'im sa'a, if you're talking about liquids, or shnei kor of something solid. There's a machlokas about whether if it's made lechatchila to be mitaltel on that level. Let's say it's a unified body for a car that is made out of metal. It's considered to be tahor because it's not mitaltel male v'reikam, or since that's what it's meant lechatchila to be, and it's coupled with wheels and motors and so on that make it movable, it is considered to be mitaltel male v'reikam. That's a machlokas rishonim. But those are our concepts. Hope you got them all straight. And tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, we can use our time directly, effectively, without any introductions, and move straight on so we keep things within the hour to our daf and to our Mishnayos. Looking forward tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, to our first day of learning the actual Mishnayos. It's a grand, indescribable joy to be with you on such a special day. And even though, unfortunately, this is the first of the 3 days of Choshech that begin on Chet of Teves, include Tet of Teves, and culminate in the horrors of Asar B'Teves, which is the beginning of the story of the Korban, the first 3 days were the exposure of Torah to Goyim through the Targum of Shivim. But hopefully all those learning this Torah of the Mishnah are desirous of that Torah, Roy for that Torah, would never misuse that Torah, and therefore it's not a violation of Tznias to be learning that Torah, so that we look forward to the end of the Mea Choshech. May we get through them without, Chas v'Shalom, any kind of mishaps. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, Yisbarach, Kol Tov, to everyone. Thank you for coming.